if sellers, right, can't push strongly below this level, this isn't a place to be adding to your position, right? This is a place to be.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. My name's Kyle, and tonight, joining in, we've got Vanta Trading's Baba Yaga and our honorary CEO, Flary. And Flary, you said you'd be coming in hot. Where are you coming in from? Is it hockey season? Or?
It is hockey season, but no, I was doing a fundraising charity dinner for a local organization. So
Everything good, I hope, come out of that?
Yeah. Raised a bunch of money, 15 grand, so.
Yeah, nice, dude. That's awesome. Yeah. What about you, Baba? What show are you watching with the wife?
So we are peeling our way through the 100.
Is that the one with the airplane?
Post-apocalyptic. They were in space, then they launched 100 people to Earth.
Oh, that's got like dinosaurs, kind of?
There's some weird, there's a couple weird animals. Yeah, not really, it's not really dinosaur based, but.
I think I watched a couple episodes of that and wasn't sure if it was worth.
There was a gorilla. There was a gorilla in one episode that was at a zoo that had been radioactively altered from the nuclear fallout.
Isn't that just the Ninja Turtles, but a gorilla?
It kind of sounds like
this
it.
This dude was really, really mad.
The Ninja Turtles were the ooze. They got the ooze.
Yeah, but it was like nuclear ooze. Anyways. Yeah,
potato, okay. Potato.
Yeah.
Potato.
So yeah, we I don't like watching shows when you have to wait forever for the next episode.
Oh no, we wait for the seasons to be
done.
When
it's all finished, yeah.
Yeah, when the series is over, then we just watched Sopranos like 5 years ago, I think, finally. Curb Your Enthusiasm finally caught up with that.
Nice.
Yeah, TV's a lot better. You don't have to wait for those cliffhangers. Anyway, well, let's do some show news real quick, then we can get into the topics. Rich Friesen, I got an episode recorded with him that'll be coming out on Thursday, which was another really fun conversation with, I think he might be our oldest friend of the show at this point. He might have been like the very first guest we ever had, like real guest who's like stuck with us. So it's fun catching up with them and just kind of touching base on what we've done up to since the last time we recorded. And if you're listening to the other program, The Buck Starts Here, Jefferson Part 1 will be out on Monday. That's about all that we've got going on. Anybody else have anything notable going on this week?
Did I talk last week about the big shipment of stuff to North Carolina?
I don't remember. If you want to just talk about it and...
Yeah,
I'll cut it if you did.
Yeah, cut it if we did. But so Flary, back when the storm happened, him and another guy from his area were trying to figure out how to get supplies down here. And like all the roads really bad. So I had a warehouse connection. So we warehoused like 20, 30 pallets of supplies and then kind of drip delivered them with my truck local to where some of my wife's family is from that was pretty severely damaged. But there was another need further into North Carolina that could take a lot of that. So we, I guess it was last Tuesday or Wednesday, all of the 20 pallets that were left were delivered to a community center in Black Mountain.
Oh, all the last of the supplies that you had?
Yeah, all of that was taken.
Wow.
24 pallets? 26?
I think
pallets,
it was
20 like
it was 26 when it came. We had 4 or 5 more, so there was 31 total that we were working out of.
That's so cool.
That's crazy that somebody still needs that much stuff.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Out there, yeah.
We talked about that when we first sent it down because we were concerned, it's more than you can store or whatever. And Kylie, who helped send it down from the organization here, he was like, listen, we do this all the time. He's like, the need, and you mentioned this too, Baba, but like the need is immediate right now, but where it really becomes like obvious is a few months down the road when there's not everybody like trying to get in there and help, like when sort of like the supplies have run out, like that's when people are going, shoot, I really, really need stuff. And it's interesting to hear that you're now, you know, a couple months removed from the storm, and, you know, still delivering to places that are just, you know, in need. It's cool.
I think when he was talking about it initially after the event had happened, he talked about wanting to be able to make those deliveries for the next like 3-4 months. So yeah, that's pretty cool that I was able to work out like that, man.
Well, life catches up too with, you know, people can be pretty resilient for a period, but the realities of the destruction and devastation and income loss and everything like that, I think it kind of catches up.
You got a few more gray hairs in that beard, it looks like.
Well, all over here, yeah. I don't know. But yeah, so that's not really show related, but.
No, good stuff though, man. Like catching up on that. What are you guys drinking tonight?
Knob Creek 9.
I have some of that in the pantry, but I went Woodford Reserve Double Oaked.
Ooh. To tell me, what's the so good about 9?
I don't know.
No, I like it. Sounds good.
Yeah, it's nice and oaky, and it's fun to say. Knob Creek 9.
I don't know what that means. All right, maybe we should do some market talk out here. Looking through these suggestions, anything kind of standing out to you guys? So we got moves to the highs. If you started over tomorrow, what would you do differently?
That's a good one too.
That's a really good one, actually. Yeah, let's do that one.
Yeah.
All right, let's start with Flurry. How about you, man?
What would I do?
Yeah.
Never start. No, I'm just I would just slow down, honestly. You know, I think we kind of had a similar conversation to this maybe a few weeks back or whatever, but, you know, it's so easy to kind of be blinded by the, you know, one day, you know, outsized gains, or, you know, the whatever the Fururism of Ferraris and big houses and all that good stuff. And honestly, it's like at some juncture you see like, okay, this is possible, right? Like you see people doing it, one, whether it's real or not. And then two, like you see results and you can sort of like factor in like, wow, okay, if I can do this and I could do that, then I could do this. And wow, then I do have, you know, lake houses and Ferraris and all that good stuff. But I think just like slowing down and setting a very like elongated, you know, equity curve plan of growth would have been would be the main thing that I would do different. Again, we still have to get him on, but you know, the kid, you know, he's really just been going through that, and he's had like a kind of an epiphany moment of, you know, just like hurry up and slow down kind of thing.
That's so fascinating that it's almost like the getting a chance to mentor somebody is like your chance to start over and do it again. And I wonder if Bobby, like, you're getting to experience.
Don't do this. Trust me.
Are you getting to experience some of that with your son? Because you're kind of letting him just kind of do it on his own and not really giving him too much guidance yet. I assume you're waiting for him to ask you for help, and he probably just hasn't done that yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think the recent experience he had will be good. I mean, he has a very simplistic approach, right? He just squishes everything in. He looks at the day and then decides, have we gone big up or big down? And if we went down a lot, then we should probably go up a little bit and then down a lot more. I mean, it's not like he's out here reading a footprint chart making decisions, right? It's very much just intuitively doing it. But that worked really well for him from December, or the end of November, December, and January so far. And then, like Kyle's aware, and then he just kerplunked everything last night, just obliterated the entire account, right? And
not the entire account, was it?
No. I mean, but like, all of his profits, all of his profits are gone. I think that experience, because I told him prior to trading that session, this isn't a good time. I just said, I wouldn't really trade right now, but if you're going to, I'll let you. And then I said, I would also mind your size. Like, you should probably size down. And he did neither of those things, exploded it, was really frustrated. So I think there's some conversations to come. I mean, he was asking me tonight, you know, what do I do next or whatever? And I was like, well, you know, you're going to hit the cooling period for a little while.
Right.
And then I'll let
step away from the minis for a bit.
I'll let you. And that was the big thing. He had a $500 session with the minis, so he's like, well, that's way better than banging out 150 with the micros. And then he turns around and loses $2,000 or $1,700 that he had made in the account. in one in 20 minutes. So I think there's some of that with him, but I am kind of letting him stump his toe a little bit.
I'd really like to hear kind of the summary of that discussion when you do sit down and talk to him about what happened. Like, what was he thinking? I would like to know how he like plans to recover from that too. Like, what sort of questions he's asking you about.
Well, he doesn't have any scars. So, I mean, today in the Imperial Challenge, he was up 2,000 and then gave back 1,500.
I thought you were playing.
No.
Oh,
see, what's interesting is, you know, it's not like you're not sharing these insights with him. But at least in my experience with mentoring, like, the people will still make those same mistakes, even though you'll tell them, like, this is going to happen. If you keep doing this, this is going to happen. I'm glad you got a funded account. I'm glad, you know, had your biggest green day. But if you keep doing that, there's only one, you know, end result of this. And they'll still do it.
You're in a funnel.
Yeah.
Towards a destination.
It's the old macro, ask me how I know. You know, like, I'm not going to hold it against you, man. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I didn't do all these things, but I'm telling you not to do them because I know what happens when you do.
Right.
And it's interesting to watch someone, you know, a mentee or just a friend, you know, a pod member or whatever, like, even though you just know it's an obvious mistake that's right there in front of you, to like continue to still do it. It just shows you how much of the game is mental and process. And again, like, you know, the things that you would do different, like, I think that would probably be one of the, but, you know, short of like, hey, take your time and don't, you know, bet so big when you don't know as much as you think you know, would be to just dumb things down. And I'd be interested to hear what you think about this, Baba, but like, you know, you and I have spent a ton of time in the lab, like, you know, building ideas and looking at different setups and all the things that we've done that like got us to where we are today. But I wonder, you know, how much of that time was in vain. You know, there's a lot of great things that I've discovered. There's probably a lot of time that I've spent on things that I don't use anymore. But I would think the one thing that I would do starting over again would be to focus more on risk management and betting big when I see what I believe is my A+, and having my version of setups be super simple and super small, like 3 to 5 setups max, very simple setups, not complicated order flow, you know, whatever, like literally just like price action or moving average, RSI, like the stuff that you kind of like laugh at now that you almost like start to circle back to.
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
In a way, you know, like the complicated stuff is good and there's deep alpha and some of that stuff. But like, if I were starting over, it would probably be focus on simple setups that you can clearly define, you know, your rule subset for them. And like, again, like so crystal clear that you know exactly when your setup is happening, whether it's an A, B, or C. And when it is A, actually sizing up and using like some version of like, I bet big win and I bet small win. And, you know, on top of that, your bet big and bet small is, you know, proportionate to like a good risk and not like I'm going to try to win a lake house today kind of thing.
Yeah, not like the life savings on roulette.
Yeah, you know, I mean, some version of that, right? So, yeah, I don't know, Baba, what are your thoughts about like the time spent on, you know, but it's all kind of like part of the journey, so it's a little bittersweet.
I always worry that if you change anything in like the journey that you took, I always wonder if you wouldn't end up in the same spot. Like that's always my concern.
Yeah.
I've been thinking a lot about that. I actually had a conversation with Banks about that a few days ago, and I was like, and we talk about this, right? Like, early in the day. Typically, not always. There was a stretch last week where it was after lunch when everything really started to move. But typically, out of the open and the original handful of key areas come into play from the morning routines within the first hour of the day. And I was just looking back and I said, dude, would it just be easier to just bang the first like two setups that happen and then just not do anything else? Like, is that boring for everyone? Maybe. But if you look at like today, Kyle, or you look at yesterday, like that's all I did. Mm-hmm. Bang, bang, done. And then today, bang, 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 done. And are you going to drive a Ferrari off of that today? No. Are you going to drive a Ferrari next year or the year after? I wouldn't, but you know, maybe if that's your goal, sure. But there's something about that continued, like, we work so hard to find these hard edges to take trades, and then we take those, but then it's almost like some of that late night work, it's like, how do we squeeze every bit of juice out of the lemon, and it's pressing too hard, I think. And I think it's tied to like the pace of which, you know, you're moving, like growing a nest egg or growing your P&L or whatever, or wanting more opportunities. But I'm finding myself really trying to take less and less opportunities, and only take the ones that make tons of sense. Like today, right, made so much sense. It was it was very clear. Now later in the day, there was a great trade that did set up for sure. And I'm not saying that, you know, anyone that shorted the million point move down, good for you. But, I was finished and
stick around for half an hour. We'll be talking about that, I'm sure.
You know, I was finishing flat. So I guess I would say yes, the simplicity thing for sure. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I learned about how the market tends to move through a lot of that I don't necessarily use. Absolutely. In a setup. So I think that's the familiarity with the dance that happens, you know?
Yeah, just the screen time was valuable. It definitely isn't wasted. It's more like the, like you said, trying to squeeze, 15 setups out of one idea or something, you know?
So I definitely think for me, if I was talking to my starter self, I would say, hey man, probably the most valuable couple of things you could familiarize yourself with would be like ranges, like typical ranges of rotations. Value, like distributions of value and balance. And you can use other stuff, but like those core concepts is where I wish I would have spent more time sooner. I mean, there's intricate setups and stuff that can come from a lot of that, and you can continue to, you know, mine down into endless opportunities and run stats on ridiculous things. And, you know, I think you learn a lot about, again, the nature of how markets move through that. But if I was telling myself day one, like, what do you need to really learn? It would be those couple things. And then how to, no matter how you do it, I think the gaining and losing of support, that horizontal magic lines, you need to be able to identify trend, and more specifically when trend is kind of shifting. Yep. And so just a systematic way. That systematic way, though, could be when we're above anything, a certain moving average, as long as that's what you orient your work around. Or your systematic way could be as simple as what was the last swing high that we took, or swing low, who mm-hmm. won the last war. Yep. Or it could be as fine-tuned and nuanced as, you know, did we get above the swing high prior to the swing high that brought us to this new low? I mean, you can extrapolate your conditions for trend out, but I think mm-hmm. clearly identifying trend, being aware of rotations, ranges of value and balance, those would be like the four things. And I would probably leave a lot of the other stuff out, because as I find myself now, that's the things that I look at the most.
Would agree. Yeah, not necessarily like maybe simple was the wrong word, but focused, right? Like a focused approach on, even if I know this process that I'm starting with on this fresh day one isn't the same process that I'll use in a year, at least I'm only spending my time on these three things. And then V2 comes, V3, and you know, it evolves to your point, but to stay a little bit more focused on just a few things that start at what is a rudimentary level, because you're starting on day one, and focusing more of my attention on risk and when to bet big and when to bet smaller and how to actually grow the account. I think that's more the idea, like a focused approach with risk being more allocation of time versus like, I need to develop this process of like advanced whatever. You know, I feel like, you know, you jump out of the gates, you start to try to like create V1, V2, V3, and like, you're like, oh, okay, here's the sixth iteration of this setup. And like, now I know so much about, you know, this footprint chart. where it's like, dude, you made a 1 minute low and you took out the previous 1 minute high. I buy and I put my stop there, and this is what I do every day. And when it does it this way and it looks better, I bet big. And when it does it this way, I bet medium. And I never bet more than this. And I'm, you know, gonna, you know, not bet bigger than my big bet until I have 100 big bets. Like, being more rudimentary and focused on really account management and not so worried about like developing some edge that's never been heard of, I think is,
you know, right?
Like, I feel like that's the thing. Like, you know, you're like, oh, I'm going to find this edge that no one's ever seen in this chart that everyone looks at. And I just think, you know, if anything, that's that, like, man, how much time did I waste
trying to
reinvent the wheel when the wheel was just fine? And honestly, like, risk is what it all comes down to when you're all like, that's what I keep telling the kid. It's like, listen, man, whatever your process is, doesn't matter. Like, just find a way to systematically bet so that you have a good feedback loop and that you know whether or not you're winning. I don't care if you're, you know, moonbeams and whatever. Like, if you're betting the same amount or in a systematic way, and you can calculate whether or not you have edge over the long run, it doesn't really matter. You know, lick your finger, stick it in the air. If you're winning, you're winning. At least do it consistently. And I think that more focused approach would be the one piece of advice I would give day one me
that,
again.
What about just slowing down in general? Like, just understand it's going to take a lot longer than you
slow
think.
Slow way down. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
don't lose $30,000 on your first day. That's probably not. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the slowing down piece is a huge part of it, no matter where you are in the journey, because you're always...
Feel that crunch.
You're always looking around the next corner, no matter where you are. So you always feel the urge to push forward. I think that we hit on this a little bit last week, the discipline piece, like like you're talking about minding your risk. I think that's like hand in hand, that and the patience, no matter where you are in the journey. You never get to take off those are like shields, and you should never throw those down. Like, you're never bulletproof. Like I said, there's always an urge to color outside the line or to press beyond what is responsible, no matter where you are in the journey, because the journey is never over. So you're always trying to grow and develop. But you never get a free pass. Like, you never get to, that's never a thing. And I think a lot of that nighttime late work and stuff is, for me, was probably, and in some ways would, could probably still be rooted in trying to circumvent the process. You know, if I work hard enough, long enough, I'm smart enough that tomorrow I can trade with 50 lots bigs and
right
you know, and I'll do that for a week and then take the month off.
Yeah, there is no shortcuts. You
know, and that's just not reality. Yeah. The other thing too, just on the heels of risk management, I think when people think of risk management, they think of win rate as being a big, like, and everyone's infatuated with winning all the time. And I lose more trades than I win. Like, my stats show that to be true. But when I win, the size of the win compared to the size of my losses, that's how it works. Like, that's the magic. In a week, I may take 15 trades. Of those 15 trades, you know, 40% of those 15, 7-ish, 6-ish are going to be a winner, and 7-ish I'm going to take an L on.
8 or 9-ish.
Or whatever, however the math works out. 15. We're only talking 15, 7 and 7. 8 and 6?
8 and 6 is 14.
Okay, 8 and 5, 8 and 6. It'll somewhere around there over the last few weeks. 7 and 7 is 14. We're talking about 15.
Getting there.
So,
getting there.
Whatever.
Almost there.
The point being,
buy when uppy.
The point being, that if you don't mind your risk, then that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, if I just decide on a random day that I'm just going to go crazy and not mind my risk, it makes the way I trade not tenable.
It's interesting too, is you can do that two ways. You can kind of screw up your risk profile. You can do it by not having, you know, good stop placements, but you can also do it on the other side of it. You start closing out trades at 1R instead of 2R and start shortchanging yourself.
Yeah.
That's why you build a magic bracket.
Magic.
And you let it do your thinking, right, Flair?
Honestly, that's like one of the day one that probably goes back into the day one is like, just find a bracket that works like from a math perspective for what you're trying to do. And just instead of trying to get cute, I'm going to take profit here, whatever, just put something together that's like, you know, a 1.5 R, 2.5 R, whatever, 2, 2.5, 3, like your, whatever your scales are, all in, all out. And then your job is to just find the entry and let the bracket work. Sit on your hands and just like feel what it feels like. Oh, I really wanted to get out here, but I don't touch it unless I either hit my stop or hit my take profit. We used to call it earn the right for discretion. Like you leave that last one where you get to move it, right? So TP1, yep. TP2 is like locked
like
in.
Like that.
Like, and then you lot. Earn the right for discretion. You can move that other one. You can take it if you want it and you feel like, oh, the market's going to reverse on me. You can cut it. Or like, hey, I think this has room to run, and you can move your target further. So you kind of earn the right for discretion, and it gives you a little bit of like rigidness. So you sit on your hands and you just feel the emotions of the trade. The market either takes me out or takes me out on the upside. And, you know, your job is to just sit there and feel it, right? Like observe, take notes. I panicked at VWAP. I didn't like the way they stalled, but like it went to my profit anyways, and put journal that, right? And you just kind of learn from that process. And I think that's
love like, that player. I love that.
You try to be this market wizard and like, oh, the market's going to go here, it's going to go there. It's like, well, you know, I mean, there's some simple math that you can just do. Like if your trade on average goes 1.5 R, just set your stop at something that makes sense and take a bunch of trades and see if it works. Like stop trying to, you know, like you said, shortchange yourself or move your stop even worse, right, to the downside, things like that. So
yeah. And also you'll learn the nuance of how well you're. So like for me, if target two, this happens often, just, and it's not from moving anything, it's just put the trade on. I have the first two targets are pretty well set. The third target is usually I'll move it a little bit. And then the fourth one, it just depends on what's happening. But one thing I've learned is if I don't get target, if we front run target two, like we pull right up to it within a few points and start to pull off. Normally, once target one comes off, the stop moves up from where the entry was, because it's an iteration of the bracket that is on the DOM that you had sent to me. And so what I've realized is that if T2 doesn't take reasonably, like without teetering right in front of it and then pulling back, then those stops need to come up to break even, because likely that trade is not, it's not going to, it like, over half the time it comes back. And so there's no need to take the, you know, the 8-point stop on the other three or four that are sitting there. Mm-hmm. if we don't get T2 off. Now once T2 comes off, then stops can come up to break even. One stop goes 10 points in profit, and then it goes from there. And sometimes it bites you in the butt, like today. I went 10 points in profit on my runner target, which I thought was fine, or 12, whatever it was. And I was literally wicked out by 1 point before the rest of the run up into what ultimately became a sell. Rather disappointing, but I mean, it is what it is. Like, that's just, there's been plenty of times where it went the other way.
You don't get as upset when your runner gets wicked out like that after you've already gotten two or three scales off, though, you know? Like when you cycle that trade two or three times, it doesn't hurt nearly as bad.
Yeah. And, or if you know, that was trade number two, so I'd already gotten 6 or 7 scales off at that point. So, I mean, kind of was what it was. But
well, I mean, I think that was a pretty good first topic there. Maybe we should move on and start talking about the other one here that we got, which was, Baba, your suggestion of all highs are not created equal.
So, I do feel like that's true.
I am actually kind of excited about this. And I know we don't get to do good, the bad, and the ugly as much anymore, because we've kind of been shifting away from that. But I was going to kind of throw a little bit in here and just share a little bit of an ugly struggle that I had this week. Was, I think, kind of tied in with that. Just not being able to stay away from like the C-minus setups, especially like pre-market. Mm. Been finding that if I do my prep at 7 to 7:30, I don't need to sit there for the next hour waiting for everybody else to show up. That's when I start doing dumb things. But I think I think that some of what you got lined up here might actually help keep me from taking some of those less than A plus setups, like those C minus, those ones that, you know, that just sometimes you just can't help yourself, can you?
Sometimes. So what I guess let's just jump into it. I think there's two ways to look at this. They there's probably some overlap. So I'll talk about value and balance real quick, and we'll look at a couple of examples of all highs not created equal, all lows not created equal. And then I think that dovetails into Flaherty kind of taking the reins and talking about kind of some of the stuff that hides from maybe like your just average chart person who looks at support resistance stuff. Let me try to share this screen.
Oh, hey-o. Okay.
Let's see.
If you would have been here on time, practice that. You
don't yeah. Set up.
Hey-o. Here we go.
Well, it looks pretty good.
Surprise. There it is. Okay, so one of the things that I'm always marking out, and most of you guys that have listened or watched, and a lot of people actually have messaged me about this and said, oh, man, I really appreciate the way you cover this, blah, blah, blah. So that's kind of cool. And I'm always marking out value that overlaps versus value that doesn't overlap, right?
Yeah.
On a daily chart. And I look at RTH only. Some people look at ETH and RTH. I reference the ETH when we come in to the open, but I'm not referencing the 24 hours prior to that. So one of the things that I'm always looking for is balance and value. So let's take a look right here.
What kind of chart is this? And can you give the dates just in case?
This is the 22nd of January, the 23rd of January, and the 24th of January.
And this is a daily TPO.
Yep. We could really turn off the TPO because we're just going to be talking about the volume.
Okay.
From the day. So we'll simplify it a little bit. When we have, and again, this is like, this has to develop, right? Like obviously one day is whatever. But when you have like these 3 days, right? We had value here that overlaps. We have value here that overlaps value here, right? So we have 2 days of overlapping value. So I'll box that from the lowest value to the highest. And then we'll take this marker for balance area high and we'll mark that because that's the highest. That value actually doesn't quite overlap there. So this is our marker for high and low. And then the value is laid out like that. So this is like a range for me. So what I pay special attention to then is the high of that range, the low of that range, and the value area of that entire distribution. And that range gets locked in when we get another day where that value doesn't overlap from here. And if you look here, you'll see, I think this drawing tool will work, that our value from here into Monday was all the way down here, right? So
big gap,
right? And actually it was lower. That's actually Tuesday. So as we came into the day, and this is the still to the point of all highs and lows aren't equal, what we had going on is we had a prior range over here, right? Value area high, value area low, balance area high right here. Okay, same thing, 2 days of overlapping. We had this balance area high we broke back into, and this is the overnight session. We had already traded above this balance area high in pre-market. So if we were going to see something really responsive out of here, we would have wanted to see that come back inside this balance area high, get inside of the current balance, which would be most of this week after Monday. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, value overlap, value overlap, value. So we had a balance area, and then we had a prior balance. So these two highs become really significant because there's the potential, and this is kind of reading the tea leaves a little, but there's the potential for two things. One, to trade above and establish above this like 50 to 70, these two old range highs. And if you think of like old highs, like once we trade above a substantial old high, just general trading talk, you know, you don't want to really see a lot of trading back inside of that. So today we had the idea and the look that this high was super important. And since we traded through this 760, this was just a no short zone. Like we were not looking for shorts in this area. We would be okay with shorts after trading up and falling off this 904 or falling off of this to go back and test this area. Any traction back inside of 750, we wanted to be short for a move back into the value for the range. And the reason is because of the way that this all this value overlapped that gave us a balance area high, a developing balance area high, and we had already kind of swept out of that in Globex and were set to open somewhere between these two spots. So when you have a balance area, any low or high, that is a part of a distribution, which I would call overlapping value a distribution, that last, the last people that commit to the move out, they're on the hook, right? And the move out is when you move above that developing balance area high. And so a random day's high isn't that important to me. What's more important is a day's high that kind of high or low that locks in a range. And how that range gets locked in is when the value, and this is, again, reading the tea leaves, you're kind of looking what needs to be accomplished for buyers on this day to have the strongest look. Again, buyers on this day is to stay above the balance area high and to stay out of prior value and establish value for this day in theory that does not overlap with value from this day, so that then this day becomes something else that we'll cover on another session, but becomes important to pay attention to. So balance area highs, balance area lows are important, and they distinguish or differentiate a random day's high or low with another. So here's an example, another example of highs and lows not being created equal. So this high is a balance, an old balance area's high. So as we moved down into the depths of despair off of that, whatever news. Yeah.
Deep seek.
there was right. no,
literally
for me,
a deep seek. Yeah.
As soon as we started to trade back out of this range, in theory, we had, what we'd done is test into a balance area high, which we would look for to be supportive or at least very pivotal, meaning we should slice right through it, reoffer, and continue, or this area will create some responsive opportunity. So if we turn back on real quick, and then I'll be done, the TPO, so we can see at least like a 30-minute chart of that, we can blow this day apart here and throw these in their own column. And you can see how that area really garnered, some love from the bid side, right?
Yeah.
You get volume falling off, whatever. Now, it's not perfect. I mean, it's not like we turned on a dime at 31.75. But what it is like guardrails. If I'm in a short coming back down into this, this is not a place to tolerate screwing around. Like if seller's pace starts to fall off, if you're looking at order flow stuff, you see some trappy vibes on the delta, you start to see some initiation, however you define that, there's different ways to define that, then you don't want to be hard-headed for the short below that. Short's down to that, great, but is if they start to screw up here, it's over with. The same story we could look at up here on today. And I wasn't trading at this time, so this, whatever. But the line of work, Flary will talk about some of the magic that happens up here. But one of the things I can tell you is if we regain balance area low, then the next target I'm always looking for is value area low. And then if we're back in this distribution, once we get into value area low, this trade is a failure unless it gets to value area high. Otherwise, the people who initiated this down move and created this distribution, they win.
You don't look for mid?
They win. I mean, mid is a great target. We also had single prints hanging out right there. Not going to talk about that. But those were very sharply respected today for other reasons as well. But yeah, your targets are, the low, the mid, and then, obviously the high. And a lot of times we'll see trades go balance area low to balance area high. And that's, to Flary's point, how do you know when your A-plus type trades are setting up? For me, around the edges of balance, I look for the market to give more trend type vibes because we're leaving a range and it going on the mission to explore, right? So today, this old balance and this current balance, which this again is like squinty, right? But definitely above 780. There was just no reason to be short until at least 840.
But I mean, honestly, that happened. If you were holding longs, no reason to cover until they filled the gap and got back into previous balance and value.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So that the idea of highs and lows not being created equal, and then the unwind, equally as interesting from this line of work. Mm-hmm. Definitely, it's a struggle the first time we tried to leave this value, but once we got through the value, this is where like breakdown trades can be a thing. I don't like to take them, but if you enter this range, you definitely. Like you can't tolerate leaving the range. Once once you're in the range, you can't be like, oh, I'm gonna buy the dip below 42. Like that is insanity. and so as this started to fail and unwind, like there was, you know, this is a place to, you know, to take the breakout short. Back inside of the OR is not a place on a day like this to look for the OR retest, and then we're gonna continue the trend, you know. For the last 2 hours of the day, they're going to bounce it right here. Like, not nearly as likely because we've given back up so much here. Like, it took a lot to get here, and now we've given it up. So, again, other places to look for the brick, like, as this trend starts to develop and unfold, other places to look to hit your wagon if you're looking to trade to the downside. Funny thing is, we talked this morning about this 750.
And yeah, what is that level? It's 750?
750 and three quarters. And there's also hourly stuff going on there that I'm sure you'll hit on, which we talked about as well. But basically, this was either going to be the failure swing for the buyers, where we get below that and it turns on the switch and sell and comes in, or we're going to, you know, we're going to break this balance and this will be our pivotal spot. So below 750 in prep, I was like, I don't know what the market's going to do. I think we've got the juice to go higher, but if we're below 750, I'm shorting this thing back to value or high.
It's funny, I was joking with some of the guys that said below that, like basically that level, 725-ish was kind of the exact hourly or something like that, 710.
Is that like activation spot?
Yeah, something like that. And I was like, as my son would say, it's no sigma below there. Like it's just like you just don't want to be long. And that's like it's kind of the opposite version of what you're saying of not all highs are created equal. But like when you get back inside a high that has that level of significance and it doesn't bid, it's sort of the flip. It's like, you know, it's not even sort of the flip. It is the flip. Like you can't continue to try to long something that's already gone through the critical level, the important high. But
And that's where I feel like some growth, I think, not growth, maybe awareness comes in, is like, I'm trying to hold the market to the highest standard to stay bullish. I don't want like a B- version of bullish activity in this current environment. Or anytime. And the same thing to the sellers. I don't want like a B- version of selling. I want A+. And the way I define those areas, and it could be like, you know, looked at like, oh, that's just, you know, you're just saying long if it's above. Well, like not every prior day's high am I going to say, hey, if we're below that, be really careful on the bid. But on this type, yes. Also, the contextualize it as you will on some higher time frame stuff, but just think of the weekly chart as well. Like the weekly chart, you know, we turned the week green and then immediately, you know, fell right back into closing the week red. That flip point is somewhere around here. I don't know where, but even just from that, you know, line of thinking, like think of it, the development of any candlestick, like buyers work to buy that thing all the way back up and then it just flips right back red. Like, come on.
Let's flip it over to Flary then. Let him pull up because he's got nice looking weekly charts to take a look
at. You want to still pull it up? Yeah. But before we jump into that, I just kind of want to summarize for anybody who wasn't able to like watch this on YouTube or whatever all the, you know, streamer things are. It's like Baba was using a TPO and value area balance areas to define a range. And all highs are not created equal, or lows for that matter, not created equal, because they they extended past an existing range.
They're like the gateways.
Right.
And, yeah. And
right.
I think that's kind of the key takeaway as I was watching what you're doing is like there was highs and lows that were developed that were clear, but inside the range or you know, like basically there was more important highs above them and more important lows below them. Therefore, like what happens in between? Yeah. Can you see a reaction from those levels? Certainly. Is there trade opportunities there? Definitely. But they're not those levels that you just like need to kind of move forward necessarily. And I think that's like, for me, that's that big takeaway. If not all highs and lows are created equally, is because highs and lows that break a range, however you define it, whether it's TPO value or whatever, those are significant because they're impulsive, right? They're leaving an area and their destination is somewhere new. And if that destination journey fails, well, you know, we have an idea of what can happen. And if it continues, right. We kind of have an idea of where we can go, which is the previous range. And yeah. That's where you kind of get that range to range journey. And I couldn't agree more. Like all highs and lows are not equal. And it's not to say that highs and lows that happen inside of a range or through like inside of like, you know, the significant, more significant levels aren't important, but you really need to like find a way to kind of map out like when the market's trying to move somewhere and it can't get there. It's pretty significant. When it's trying to move somewhere, it gets above a level, it pulls back and it holds it, and then it goes. It's significant. And it's, you know, whether it's a don't short or a keep holding longs, you know, kind of up to you. But I think that's kind of the takeaway for me from that conversation is like, you kind of need to define what's important. And typically, it's some version of a range break.
Well, you notice, right? The other part that's missing that he also talked about, but it's, you don't just get to that spot and then fart around for fucking 3 hours either. Like that's not a trade he wants to take either.
Yeah.
You can hold, you, and those are the areas like, so you can get in trouble if you hold the market to that high rung on the ladder of expectation in the middle of 5 days of balance where you're just churning volume. But when you get to the edges, that's when you can put them under the gun. Because if buyers fumble the bag, there is such a huge opportunity. And what I would say, the last thing, encourage you to take a daily volume chart. Whenever one day overlaps the next, box that as a range, and then go back in time and look at what a balance area high failure looks like, where you have a specific balance area and you open a day and you peak above it and pull back in. Look at how the market unwinds off of that, or vice versa. When you have a balance area low, well-defined, and you trade below that and recover, once that's recovered, the characteristics that become very apparent in the movement, like those are the places where you can have an expectation of wider ranges, market that's like reaching for something, and it's really easy to tick 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 get your trade going and get some scales off. So.
Fuck yeah, Baba! Is it Monday yet, man? I'm fucking
pumped. Let's go.
Let's go.
That's the weekend vibes. All right, so you know, I guess in the sort of like recap of some of the things that we talked about, what was it, 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago, yeah.
We talked about trend breaks, and I think the point of this, you know, version of an alpha drop here would be to talk about what happens when we don't activate. So we talked about activation. Again, you know, activation is basically which leg of the auction sort of solidified a high or a low as like, yep, we like it and we're going to continue to move forward. And we look to rebid or reoffer a high or a low that has that activation. So today's short was a recap of that. So we'll hit that first. But I think what we want to follow up with is kind of in the vein of what Bob was talking about, of like, what happens when you don't break into that significant high or significant low that's not all created equally, and sort of like you fail to activate. And you know, again, from the cool tech or gain lost you know terminology, they call it fail to gain or fail to lose. And again, I've got kind of like a little bit more systematic way to approach that. But before we jump into that, let's look at today's short NES specifically, which was also a pretty key historical delta level in NQ at the same time. But this was last week's high over here. We have a move to the high. Let's see. I'll zoom in on that a little bit so we can see it before we go look at that level. Yes. So here's our move to the high here. Very clearly, we have a low that goes to the high. We were kind of mapping it out earlier. I didn't take that off, but we have a low that moves to the high and our activation level is here. So we need to get below this swing low here, which this happens right here. So then we go back and we look at what leg was responsible for that. What sellers activated that high and said, this high is a high that we want to sell, which we all know they did. This was the Deep Seek Friday news into the Sunday Globex gap and, you know, ultimately the recover that was this week. But that left this sell side trend break. So again, 2 weeks ago or whatever it was, we talked about how to map these out. Go listen to that if you haven't followed up on that.
I do want to just point out that one is a little bit more of a nuance, the one that we're looking at today, because of that inside bar. I don't know how well you got into that in the original video. But yeah, if you blow it up into a 15-minute, you can see very clearly, I think,
what he's showing. Yeah, I mean, so inside bars, you know, we make a high and then we make a low. And you have this bar that we've mapped as the trend break. It's an inside bar. So an inside bar or an outside bar, for that matter, it has to either go high or low first. And you can see that this bar clearly finishes high, which means it had to go here and then go here, which makes that a high. But nonetheless, this is our sell side trend break. And as we zoom out, we had this level that we were, sitting amongst throughout the week. And today we pulled into that level. Again, in the pod that I was trading with today, we took 609 SPY puts at 1004. Typically, what you see is the first touch of these levels, like, the first touch is fine, certainly good to enter there, but like the hourly close after that first touch is always, it's statistically, not always, but it's statistically the better entry. So at like 10:04, when that hourly candle closed and they kind of pushed up into there, we took 609 puts. They went like obviously pretty ballistic. And we went all the way basically back down through some of, you know, the last, like the FOMC lows and some of those things. But this is a great example of what we were talking about a few weeks back of that, the sell side trend break from last Friday. So, you know, again, this level sat there for a week. This was on my charts for a week. Watching it today, this would have been one of the key targets for longs, no tick OR. 30-second, 5-minute, and 15-minute today. They gap filled in an NQ, and when we pulled into there, it's one of those like tough trades to take. But again, going back to the conversation we had previously, is like you stick to a few setups and you just take them, right? And so this is one of the trades that I do. It was a 1 hour level. It was technically also a 4 hour level as well, but I took these on zero DTE because it's a 1 hour level. ES. 1 hour move is like 22 points right now for an average leg. An average move, which would be a significant leg or sequence of legs, is roughly like 35 points. So took basically at the money because I was cautious of this level right here, which you can see they actually bid into. And then it broke down. But really cool sell side trend break level. Again, also mapped out the buy side trend break. So we made a low on the 1 hour here into what was basically this like Deep Seek sell off on Monday. We make this move to the low here. It needs to get above the previous high, which happens here at roughly like 6,090 and some change. So here is the leg of the auction that says, hey, we like that low, let's go higher. The day that follows, we bid out of that level a few times and we went right back into the sell side trend break. So a couple of really cool trend break trades this week in ES, if you want to go back and, you know, listen, kind of explain the rules and things like that. But along this sort of conversation, one of the things that we want to talk about today specifically was, well, okay, so in these examples, they activated the trend. The buyers that made that low convincingly went to the next high and said, we liked that low. Well, what happens when they get to that activation level and they fail to sort of say, yes, that low is good? And so that's why kind of having this activation level idea is helpful, because again, in cool tech or whatever, they call it fail to gain or fail to lose. So what happens is, and I sent our little DM chat this fail to lose. And so we'll zoom on this. This is NQ, again, from earlier in the week. And NQ made this 1 hour move to the high here on the 22nd. And we needed to get below this low, whatever the low that came before it. And that low was basically 21,880 to the tick. And we came down, and as you can see, not all lows are created equal. Well, this low is the low that once they close an hourly candle below it, now those sellers have a solid move to the high. That high is confirmed in this system. Well, what you see here is wicks below and rejections. And actually, they have like multiple wicks below and rejections. And so this would be a fail to lose, or an FTL. So they fail to lose this move to the high. And when you can't make a new low, you go make a new high. And that's kind of the concept here is we talked about trend breaks and breaking through this activation level. And that activation level, as Baba said, would be a significant low or a significant high in this framework or this mode of work. But the same way that he was talking about, like, if sellers, right, can't push strongly below this level, this isn't a place to be adding to your position, right? This is a place to be being like, you know, on guard for your runners. Like, hey, man, they couldn't get below this low. This is a problem for shorts that are up here. Because what starts to happen is when you can't break that significant low, then sellers start to liquidate their positions, which become buyers, and buyers start to see that and get active. And when you can't make a new low, typically what happens is you go make a new high. And so the inverse of the trend break setup, which would be that confirmation of a high or a low that was significant, is failing to activate or failing to gain or failing to lose a move to the high. And sort of the memeism of it is, if you can't make a new low, you go make a new high. If you can't make a new high, you go make a new low. And so this is an hourly version of that. I want to say just quickly, I think I have a daily in NQ that was also pretty ridiculous somewhere in here. Yeah, here we go. Okay, so this is failing to make a new low on the daily. So, you know, here you can see we have a very clear move to the low. This is like the 10th of September of 2024. And we move up to roughly 20,800, which is funny because that's basically the same level we're retesting right now. And we make this like multi-day move up to 20,850-ish. And in order to activate or confirm this move to the high, sellers made a high, they're starting to push back down, and they actually break that move to the high. But in order to confirm it, they need to close below this low here. And so this would have been the activation level, right? And if sellers would have continued this journey down, we would have a trend break, right? And we'd look to reoffer this trend break, but they don't do that. What they do is they peak below right here, and they fail to lose or fail to activate that move to the high. And if you can't make a new low, then you go make a new high. And you know, this on the daily level, you know, it looks something like this. And so again, you know, to Baba's point, not all highs and lows are created equally. Well, it's the same way, right? Like this low was so significant that when they failed to break below it, the result is an unwind of the people that tried to break below it. And so, you know, again, it's important, like a
2,200 point move.
Yeah, it's like a flag on the play. Like, yeah. All right, everything stops. We're going the other
off way. Sides, right? They're off sides. Literally off sides, trapped, whatever you want to call it. Like, you know, again, from like a normal price action perspective, you know, Adam Sett, like this is like literally Adam Sett's like probably bread and butter trade is this peak and fail. Would be a more like ABC way to call it. Like, but the key is, right, you can peak and fail below all kinds of lows. Some of them matter more than others. And so, like, you know, this like dovetail back into that conversation that we just had is not all highs and lows are created equal. So failing to lose an insignificant high or low that's not an activation level is not as important as failing to lose the one that was about to spark the momentum. And that's, you know, a critical, like, you know, sit up in your chair, you know, as Baba would kind of say, moment of like, if I'm short and I see this pause here and that wick below, you got to kind of start to question things, right? And that's probably not a spot to either add, right? Which I think is something that people do a lot, right? Myself included. Yeah. Ask me how I know is like, you get this great short, right? Like, we'll zoom in on this. Imagine this is an hourly chart, not a daily, right? You're short up here and you're short and you're holding and you're up 200 points and life is great. And we're about to break this critical swing low. And we peak below it, and you know you're high five and DMing your friends, and you're like, this thing's gonna go, and we're gonna take out this low another 200 points lower, and it starts to pull back, right? And what's the natural thing to do is to, oh, I'm gonna sell this level on a reoffer because it's gonna go here, and then it's gonna go here to this place I know it's gonna go. Well, the problem is that we've already peaked below a low that matters, right? That's not created equally. And so I think, like, again, to kind of like pull the whole thing back together, is why it matters is when we peak and fail here, you're not adding to your short here, right? You're considering cutting or flipping. And that's why knowing which highs and lows matter. And you know, this is just a systematic way to kind of tie into the conversation that we just had. So yeah, probably need to watch the replay for some of that to make sense, and definitely you know, chime in on Twitter or whatever for some questions. Happy to chat more about some of the rules and system about that. But
the Bob other thing, got something to say. Yeah, I was just gonna say, quick, Kyle,
because we're wrapping up.
I will. You say sometimes, Kyle, or you have asked why I have the perspective that a lot of times it will go further than you think it should. And so, like, I'm especially cautious on shorts to not add to them when they pull back aggressively, because oftentimes, not all the time, but you can go from a 4 hour or a daily, you can look at a 1 hour, you can look at 15 minutes. 15 minute gaining and losing support, not nearly as reliable, but if you want a little more zoomed in detail of what's unfolding, that's why a lot of times on the 9:30 open back in like last year, we would see like a pullback, a short pullback, and then it would just struggle, and then trend the other way all day, rope everyone into thinking short, they reoffer the whole way back up, they get blown out the whole way back up. It's because a lot of times it's that kind of level on some time frame is what you're fighting.
It's against. frustrated traders.
Yep.
Well, I think that's probably gonna be enough alpha for today. Any more than that, man, you know, blow some
minds.
And
if you take those two ideas and melt them together, they have a baby called profitability.
No shit. Please join me in thanking Bobby Young and Flary for dropping by, and go thank yourself for sticking around to the end. Remember to show our panelists some love. Click on those links in the show notes. Visit VontaTrading.com to see how Pro does it every day. Go to BandOfTradersPodcast.com so you can stay up to date with everything we have to offer. When you finish all of that, find your next sipping whiskey with our friends over at Rare Barrel Whiskey on YouTube. Whew. While you're doing all that, we'll be in the kitchen cooking up another exciting episode. But until that dinner bell rings, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a green week.
Amen.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.